Hello, I'm Jim Tynan from the Civitas Institute. I happened to do a brief informal interview on my smartphone with pundit and professor Mike Adams before his talk at the ICON lecture series about cultural Marxism and the suppression of free speech on college campuses. And here's that brief informal interview.
Middlebury College and Charles Murray. He wrote a column about that. He said he was rather pessimistic about things. This could be a tipping point in the wrong direction. How do you see that disturbance, the actual attack on him and
one of his sponsors?
I think that now we're in a situation where hopefully the campus left is beginning to figure out that the whole speech code and microaggression movement is, they're creating a monster that's spinning completely out of control. Right now, my controversy with Mirghani last semester, the queer Muslim jihad thing, there was nothing in that column that should have been controversial. The entire point was that her conduct in attracting the Secret Service, if you read my column, I'm ridiculing her because of her regular incidents on campus of doing, screaming in front of tables of people who were trying to pamphlet, you know, helping to form human chains with other students, getting the Secret Service called on her. I wrote that article trying to say, you know, if you go back and read that article I wrote for the Daily Wire, for Ben Shapiro, it says the chickens of diversity are coming on the roost. This is all just trumped up. Well, what the heck happens? Nothing for about 2 months. Then after the election, everyone freaks out. They're actually proving my point. They have a complete emotional breakdown. Mm. Oh, you outed this queer Muslim. No, that's what she calls herself. No, I didn't. Well, you named her. That was unprofessional conduct to name her in a column. No, she did 2 national interviews 17 days before. We just kept going through all these excuses. Mm-hmm. And nothing made sense that they were angry about. They're just pissed off, right? And this is kind of what I've been getting at. This is where we're going. Mm-hmm. And the people at Yale and at Mizzou, the administrators who are left, who are getting lambasted. You know, someone screaming in their face. You know, someone in the context of Yale, people demanding resignations in the context of Mizzou. They better figure it out pretty quickly that this idea of teaching people that their emotions trump other people's ideas is going to produce mass chaos on the campuses. So they better figure it out. So I look at an incident like the Charles Murray thing, and I think to myself, well, you know what? Maybe a few bad incidents might begin to turn things around. Because you think about where the speech code came from. The whole thing came not from just ideology. A lot of it was in the wake of the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill thing, and they wrote very expansive racial harassment and sexual harassment policies on the campuses, which kind of morphed into speech codes, because they figured they'd get sued for harassment, and they needed to show they were doing something about it.
Right.
And their calculus was that, well, so what if they're overly broad and encroach on free speech? We might be able to win a harassment suit here or there. Yeah, but no one's really going to sue us for violating the First Amendment, right? So there was some calculus that was involved when we got into this mess, and then it got fed by ideology. So there actually is a chance now that they can look and say, uh-oh, now we're actually starting to have rioting and safety issues. Mm-hmm. Now we've got to go undo some of this mess. I know we've had perennial offenders out there. UMass Amherst, and I had an incident where my Q&A, one of the very few times I had to be taken away by bodyguards, the Q&A turned into a violent struggle between a communist and a war veteran over the microphone. Mm. It was a physical altercation, and I had to be taken out. Next time I went to Amherst, I realized that we had paid $450 or something for the hosting group to pay for campus security to be there. And they didn't do anything. Mm. So the next time I showed up at Amherst, it must have been a year and a half later, 2.5 years later, I pulled the cops outside and I said, I just want you to know, and pardon my language, you can clean this up, but I looked at them. I was just so tired of all the incidents. They just had another one a month before that where they had shouted down a conservative columnist from the Boston Globe, like the only one they had. He had to leave. The event. And so I actually told the cops, I said, you know, what your problem is? I said, you got guns, but you don't have balls. I said, you guys are cowards, but I'll tell you something right now. You will, if someone disrupts this speech and stands up and starts screaming, I said, you will arrest them. Are you going to get sued for breach of contract because we've written you a check?
Yeah.
And Boy, I took him outside and read up the Riot Act. What do you think happened that evening? Two people screaming at the top of their lungs were carried away in handcuffs and arrested. And the third person started to shout at me in the middle of the speech. I said, do you want to follow them to jail? And the person went, no. And all of a sudden, for the rest of the event, we had calm. You know, it's interesting. But I use that as an example of how, for a long time, the administrators have kind of looked the other way because they figured they could. And they thought, well, you know what? We'll just let the leftists. It's only the leftists doing it.
Yeah.
We'll let them shout down the conservative speakers because we disagree with them. So, but what we've learned, what we know, of course, is that when they can be facing something that's really destructive to their interest, their ideology has to be put aside. I mean, when you start to have violent mobs like this on campus, what do you think is going to happen to enrollment? Simply look at Mizzou. So it could, excuse me, this could be a turning point. We'll see. Yeah, but the administrators, let me reiterate it. I've said it already, but let me say again, the leftist administrators have got to realize you can't get left enough to please these people. And so they need to understand that it's in their interest to control these folks because they're going to call for their heads. Go by. Right back to the resignation of the president at Mizzou. He wasn't a Republican or a libertarian. There you go.
What about the larger issue of campus indoctrination, which you have written about? Hopefully, perhaps these big violent incidents, but what about the pervasive culture that tends to oppress, or as in your book, Letters to a Young Progressive, that tends to indoctrinate people? What could shift that tide, or is that tide shifting just because it's gone as far as it will be? What do you think the outlook is?
The important thing there is that we have to do something about the speech policies. The problem is that the marketplace of ideas is rigged. That's the issue. And the answer is legislation. Now, it's interesting, you go back, I'll talk about this tonight, I'll close with this, but back when the Democrats were in charge of the entire government, basically state government in the 1960s, those guys passed legislation like the speaker ban of 1963 that was very anti-free speech. In recent years, the legislature has been the solution to campus problems. The two prime examples of that are the SAE Act, which deals with student right to counsel, which I worked on that from the inception. And the other one was the Ohio Religious Liberty Bill that we got brought over here and passed in the state of North Carolina. 2 years after that, no, 1 year after that, I'm sorry, in 2014, July of 2014, before we signed that into law. And we've had, obviously, we strengthened freedom of association and due process on our campuses. We can do the same thing with speech codes and speech zones and things of that nature. And that is next. You may have heard that that's next. Something's coming down the pipeline. And so, legislatively, we've got to, the legislators got to stop buying this line that they're obligated to fund the universities and then stay out of their business. If they're doing really stupid things that are costing people money, look at my lawsuit. Look at that. Come on. At no point did Ross, remember the academic freedom issue they tried to make out of Ross, you know, being forced out after the bogus class controversy, that in and of itself, the fake classes for athletes thing at UNC Chapel Hill was enough to drive him out. But he was completely behind the suit, you know, that I was involved in, behind their legal theory of trying to completely strip you know, columnists slash professors of First Amendment rights, if they dared to mention the fact that they're a columnist on their promotion or their annual evaluation. I mean, there was this very expansive interpretation of Garcetti and very censorious interpretation of it. And, you know, we can't look at that behavior. Look at the way they handle themselves in suits involving conservatives and look at speech codes and all that and buy into the idea that it's in the interest of academic freedom for the legislature to just give them money and stay out. They screw up a lot of things that cost everyone a lot of money. And so the legislature does have to come in and do things that are reasonable. And I'm looking forward to this next thing that's about to happen with you know, the Dean Forest is working on.
Yes.
And I've enjoyed being involved in that, and it's going to be good. But I also predict, I'll be talking about this tonight, that Cooper will veto it.
Ah.
Because he always gets it wrong with free speech. He's a leftist, by the way. He's not the old... You look at him, you look at his haircut and his accent and everything and kind of his awkwardness, and he looks like a little bit of an Andy Griffith, right? Mm-hmm. And you think, well, he's this old school country populist liberal, right? No, he's not. He's like a leftist. He really is.
We were writing about that. Voters thought they were voting for a good old folksy Roy, but then he comes out and says people in North Carolina are racist bigots because they don't want men in girls' bathrooms.
Yeah. And that civil rights analogy is, oh gosh, I can't imagine how that can play well with any black voter. It's so insulting. It's bad.
Maybe one final question. I know you want to get prepped for your talk. What can an ordinary North Carolinian do? Fight back against this leftist power. Now, we can elect non-leftist legislators and whatever, but they still have a lot of power in the media and on the campuses. Is there anything us ordinary North Carolinians can or should do to try to push back against this?
Well, they always call in on radio shows. They always write letters to the editor, and they always write chancellors. And then chancellors are worried when they get emails. You know, oh, I'd never send my kid to your school because, Mike Adams teaches there, and he's someone who's really paid by George Soros.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fake parent and stuff like that, you know. So we just have to start caring as much about our children and about the Constitution and about the future of this country as they do about their ideology.
Mm.
You know, we're often dealing with a lot of people who don't have families, who don't have churches,
mm-hmm.
and all that, and like secular humanism is their religion. And so we've got to recognize that. We've got to find the time to make a lot of noise, you know. And it bothers me, this illusion of the majority. Like, look at the Mardani controversy. You know, all these people secretly writing me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I support you, and so do my fraternity brothers, and, you know, I work in this office on campus, and I support you, but, you know, they'll fire me if I speak up, or my professor will get mad at me in the class discussion if I defend you and admit that I like you, mm-hmm. that I read your books or your columns. That business has to stop. You know, I didn't go through a 7+ year legal battle for people to just waive their First Amendment rights. You know, and I actually wouldn't have had to if just a handful of people would have said, hey, wait a second, I support that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I only know of one person who consistently publicly supports him on campus, and he's retired
mm-hmm.
now, so he's not on campus anymore, actually. But, that is an important, it's actually the little things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to run for office. You don't have to join the school board or do anything like that. But I really actually do think it's the little things. And I know we got to start to give Cooper hell. Because I'm just anticipating that he's going to veto this. And of course, an important thing I'm going to call on people to do, actually, is to also let their legislators know, no, this is a priority issue for us. It's become one because of the Mizzou and the Yale controversies, people are actually kind of frightened by what they're seeing and unsettled. So the public's thinking about it, and they need to let the lawmakers know.
Okay, good. Hopefully we'll have some changes in the other direction.
Yeah. Some. Anyway, great.
It's going to be a fun.
Well, that's the interview. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about what Dr. Adams had to say, check out the blog posts and an article at www.nccivitas.org.